Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Ryan Fink of Stream coming to us from Portland, Oregon. How's your day going, Ryan?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Really good. Is it springtime in Portland yet, or what's the... Portland has some beautiful days, but they're a little bit rarer, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. We do most of our recruiting during the summer. So that's about 2.5 months out of the year.
Smart. You probably... I don't know if you guys laugh at this or not, but what do you think of the show Portlandia? How accurate is it? I love that show, by the way.
I hear it's really accurate. I'm one of the rare people that actually hasn't seen it.
Really?
But I hear great things about it.
Cool. Well, let's just start off with the basics. So what is Stream, and how'd you come up with this idea? What's the backstory?
Yeah, so I met my co-founder and CTO, Sean Atkinson, in 2017, and Sean just got done building a home. He was essentially the GC on the whole home building aspect, and it was just a very broken and painful process for him, and then myself just maintaining my own home. We came up with the idea of this notion of on-demand access to expertise for the world around you. So not whereas a YouTube video is someone else's environment, it's you're connecting with someone in the moment to get expertise and advice on your appliance or your environment. So we started building Stream to do that. And what Stream does is it connects consumers to a group of certified professionals through on-demand video calling. So once the consumer's connected to the professional through this video call, it's one-way video. So the customer's holding their phone, pointing, and the pro's seeing their video. It's not, a face-to-face chat. It's really, let's see what's going on. Two-way audio. And once that connection's made, we give the pro a tool set to really help drive the conversation and become more efficient. And we're using that tool set based on augmented reality. So we're partnered with groups like Apple's AR Kit, Google's AR Core to be cross-platform. And the pro can do things like use a laser pointer to help it drive the conversation or actually anchor a 3D arrow to the real world. Instead of trying to describe, hey, look at this thing over here, they can literally reach out and point to it. And we found that these collaboration tools can increase the efficiency of the communication by up to 30%. So that's just faster resolution time, more quotes, if that's what the pro is doing. And then also it's capturing information as if the pro was on site, but even more accurately because we're doing it through computer vision and through the phone's camera. So the pro can take a picture, and in the background we're capturing depth information so the pro can take remote measurements. We're doing some OCR and some object recognition to automatically pull out things like serial numbers, model numbers, and recognize, is this a kitchen or a living room, things like that.
Wow, that's heavy duty. Are you sitting on top of like FaceTime, or is it your own communication platform you're using?
Yeah, so we're actually partnered with a company called Twilio. So they're providing our base video layer, and then we're building our product on top of their video product.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, that's neat. And what's the most common kind of use case so far? Is it like plumbers or kitchen remodelers, or there's probably some pattern you're seeing already, I'm sure?
Yeah, it's really interesting. We had a theory that we wanted Stream to be very horizontal. We wanted anyone from a plumber, a painter, all the way down to someone maybe teaching their community how to cook. We wanted this to just be a very horizontal platform, but we are initially focused on the home services space, and we're seeing a couple different use cases in various home service verticals, which are companies are using this to quote remotely. Pros spend on average between 40 to 60% of every day in traffic, not getting paid, giving free estimates. So we have pros literally tripling, quadrupling the amount of quotes they could give. And secondly, once they've won the job, pros are using Stream to interact and collaborate internally. So maybe the pro on site isn't the pro who gave the quote, so they have less context. Now that pro can communicate with someone in the back office when an issue comes up, or maybe they're a more novice pro. So they can connect internally to just get the job done quicker. And then thirdly, we have companies using Stream for support. So once the job's complete, they set the customer up, and it's just a better way to support the customer when something comes up, opposed to rolling a truck every time there's an issue.
Yeah, that's interesting. And what's the business model? Are the consumers paying for the time of the pros, or are the pros paying you to, you know, be able to deliver more quotes, or is there some other method you guys have figured out?
Yeah, so Stream's a SaaS product. So it's a monthly subscription, so per pro per month, starting at $19, depending on the feature set. And it's free to consumers. So the pro can invite 10 or 10 million customers, and they're still just paying that $19 a month.
It's really interesting. And right before the call, you and I briefly talked about Andy Lowery and RealWear, which is you know, kind of an analogous model in some ways. They're doing you know, the kind of wearing a camera on your head, and it's the roughneck at the offshore oil well, getting coaching from pros back on mainland or something, and you're kind of taking it to a different segment, a really fascinating space. So good stuff, good stuff.
Yeah, the RealWear guys, yeah, they're absolutely crushing it. And the enterprise space is definitely a tried and true space for head-worn and augmented technology. We're one of the first companies really pioneering a utility application for AR in the consumer space. So it brings a whole different set of challenges, but it's been a fun ride so far.
Cool. So you guys started in 2017, right? So not too old, not too long?
Yeah, not too long. We're just over a year old.
And okay, so let's talk about your fundraising. You're in Portland, Oregon, your new company. How much have you raised? How many rounds? And was it seed, VC, angel? What?
Yes. So we raised a seed round that we closed in February of this year. So we raised about a little over $3.7 million from mostly institutional VCs. We have some really, I'll call them super angels who also invested, that just huge value adds to what we're building. Yeah, so it's, we contacted, I mean, we went through the whole process of raising a round. So it was definitely quite the process, but we ended up with some just absolutely incredible investors, both locally and from the Bay and in New York.
Who was the lead on the deal, or was it more of a party round?
Yeah, we set the terms, actually built and sold my last company. So we've been through the gambit before. We had some investors from my old company invest in the new company. So we really had a jump start on this round.
Okay, cool. Was your old company in the AR space or something totally different?
Yeah, it was in the AR space as well.
Cool. Interesting. So talk about the process. You know, you're in Portland. How are you identifying? Were you tapping the local Portland investor market, and what does that look like? Or were you going just for AR type investors? Tell us about your process. How'd you build a funnel and run it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's one of the most time consuming and painstaking things to do as an entrepreneur when you just want to build your business. But it's absolutely necessary if you want to raise money. So, I mean, we ended up pitching 130 plus investors. Even though this was our second time around, we really wanted to not only play the numbers, we did a lot of due diligence on building this list of investors. But we wanted to find the right investors for what we're trying to build and accomplish. So of course we got a ton of no's, and we also said no to some investors that just clearly weren't a fit. But we really worked our network to get the introductions, a warm intro to the investors we wanted to talk with, because it just gets you so much further than trying to cold email someone.
And let's go back a minute. How did you build that list of 130? You know, what was your criteria, or did you go on Quora and find a list of AR investors? Like, what did you actually do?
It was mostly networking. So it's something that I've been building over the past, you know, probably 8 years now. It's really, we would get connected with one investor, and whether they invested or not, we'd always leave on good terms, and we would just ask, is there anyone that you've interacted with that Stream could be a good fit for? And we got most of our intros from actually probably 50-50 from investors who didn't end up investing but wanted to keep an eye on us, made intros, mm-hmm. and then also investors that did invest, of course, they want us to close out the round, so also made a lot of intros.
That's interesting. So let's touch on that. You got intros from people who were not coming in on the round, or essentially effectively saying no. That's always a little bit risky, right? Because there's always like, hey, you're referring these guys to me. Why aren't you putting your own money in? How'd you overcome that? That's a interesting strategy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, it can be, you have to, you know, play it with some balance. But it really depended on why it wasn't a fit for the investor we were talking to. Sometimes it was, this investor typically invests in Series A or larger rounds. So we just weren't far enough along.
Yeah.
So they made intros to smaller seed type funds. And then other times we were just outside of their investment team. So they would make intros. They were super excited about what we're doing. We didn't fit, or they had a competitive company. So they'd make intros to maybe another firm that they've worked with in the past that we could be a good fit for.
Okay, interesting. So you talked to 130 and ended up with, I'm sorry, how many came in on the deal?
That's a good question. I think we had about 10 or 12 come in.
12, gotcha. And when did you start? How long did the whole thing take? What was your funding cycle look like?
The whole thing took probably about 8 months.
Okay.
So, yeah, it took a lot longer, as it always does. And along the way, even the investors who said no, we actually had them come back a couple months later and end up investing, because I would ask them if they said no and I felt they were a good fit. I would ask them if I can add them to my Friends of Stream list. And I would send out just once a month, I would send out an update of the progress we've made. So they were able to track us over a couple of months, or sometimes over 6+ months. And at that point, the deal terms had changed in a lot of cases, and which they understand, and it diluted some of their risk. But we ended up closing some that said no initially.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a good strategy. Even if they say no, let me add you to my list. So you said the deal terms changed. So actually, let me rewind. So when you started that 8-month process, like, what were you pitching? Did you guys have a product yet? Did you have any contractors or service providers on the platform, or was it conceptual?
No. So we did have an MVP, a minimal viable product, that we had just built nights and weekends. So we had something to show. Not only did we have something to show, but we got it in the hands of professionals literally 30 days after we built the prototype. So we had real user feedback. We had a real MVP of a product, and we had some data that we can go to the investors and show, hey, this is our assumptions, this is how we've been killing those assumptions and growing the product, this is how people are using it, how we think they're going to use it, and just be armed with a lot more information and try to answer a lot of the questions that investors will ask before they ask them, just to help expedite the conversation, to either get to a quick no, or yeah, let's keep talking, or yeah, let's track you and add me to that Friends of Stream list.
Interesting. So, okay, great. I'm gonna keep poking on this a bit. You started out kind of pitching with an MVP with some assumptions. What were you in your Friends of Stream list, what were you kind of reporting every month? Was it purely just, you know, number of contractors, hours of engagement, or time on the platform? What were your metrics that you really found to be, you know, you turned around no's, right? Which is actually one of the hardest things to do in fundraising. You turned around no's. So I'd love to hear like what you were putting in those newsletters.
Yeah. So we initially, when we were building Stream, we were building it for us. So we're building it for consumers. We had this, you know, grandiose vision that we wanted to any consumer to just get on and stream with a pro. But then you're faced with this two-sided market problem. So a lot of investors wanted to see how we were going to face that challenge. So the more we learned, the more we started to make these micro pivots and focus on just building a really good tool for the pros. So we just kept the investors updated on our learnings, to be honest. So that was, you know, pro feedback. That was how the product and the company and the vision is evolving as we learn. Because that's a big part of building a successful company is how quickly can you have good assumptions, but then also make these micro pivots to find product market fit. So we would update them on, yes, user metrics. We would update them on investor conversations, and then also some of the partnerships we were able to get in the meantime. Like we ended up partnering with HomeAdvisor. That was a huge partnership for us, a great fit for what we're trying to build because they have the marketplace and we've got some really great technology. So we would just update them on, you know, the whole progress, the team growth and everything.
No, that's great. What was there a... You don't have to give me exact numbers, although if you're willing to, that'd be great. But was there a hardcore like traction story, like, or was it more here are our learnings, here's our funding status, and kind of our partnership deals? Did you have like a key metrics section?
Yeah, so it was to be honest, it was both. I think the metrics were almost less important than some of the other growth and learnings that we were making. We did just go from a handful of companies to, you know, several hundred in that time as well. So we had just had a bigger data set to learn from. And then it's really just, it's showing the investors that you're learning, you're growing, and you're telling a good story. And you've got that big vision, but you're practical about how to get there.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Cool. And so you're doing this all from Portland. So were you, you know, I don't know how many AR investors are in Portland, but I assume you're talking to people all over the place. How did you kind of market this funding round from Portland?
That's a great question. In Portland, we did have some existing investors, and we had an existing track record, so that definitely helped us both identify who in Portland we wanted to work with and who already knew us. So there's some great groups here, like Portland Seed Fund, Oregon Venture Fund, Archivist, which is a new VC fund from Steve Marsh that just popped up. So there's really great seed money here in Portland. For us to raise that larger round, that 3.7, we definitely had to expand our efforts. So we, of course, had a lot of conversations with VCs in the Bay and in New York. There has been popping up a lot of VR, AR specific focused VC funds. That was definitely a good starting point for us. And once we closed some of those, they made intros to others. And it's a really interesting theme for investors to be looking into right now. So our market timing just happened to be really great because also we started in April, and shortly after that, Apple announced their AR Kit platform, and then shortly after that, Google announced their AR Core platform. So we had told all the investors these are coming this year, and this is how we're executing, and it all just became true, and so it got investors even more excited.
Yeah,
so we really had a deep understanding of the market and how it was evolving. And I think that really helped with our conversations with the investors.
I've picked up on this theme with some of these other conversations I've had. It's like, I love that. I'm sort of paraphrasing what you just said, but you're telling investors what's going to happen. And then when it comes true, you know, you kind of leverage that to get them excited. No, that's great.
It's a dangerous game. You got to be very sure what you're saying.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah.
Okay, I'm going to stick on this one topic for a minute. Did you kind of lock up some local Portland investors and then go kind of market or shop at Bay Area, New York, wherever? Or was it the other way around? Did you get a few like Bay Area AR firms, you know, committed and then kind of round up the local money? Was there any rhyme or reason to it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually started by having conversations outside of Portland, just because I know that that was going to be the harder goal for us to accomplish. And then I of course, from day one, updated the investors in Portland that I wanted to work with. Hey, here's what I'm doing. I'm going to start raising some money. They expressed interest. I said, great. And I went out and I closed some money outside. So both in the Bay and New York. And it just made the investors who already said they were interested in investing in Portland, it made them all that much more excited to invest. And some of them even invested a much larger amount than they originally were going to, because we found some great traction even outside of Portland.
Yeah, that's interesting. Talk about the actual like logistics of that. Were you flying to Bay Area for a week and arranging a bunch of meetings in advance, or was it more just ad hoc when someone would express interest, you'd pop down here, or you know, what was your
We did have some in-person meetings for shows like CES. I went to Augmented World Expo in May, June. So I went to some of these industry shows and had some conversations. I guess not CES, but Augmented World Expo I did. Besides that, the technology like Skype and Hangouts and Zoom are so good these days that it was fairly easy for us to just hop on a video call and go through our deck and go through our story and just feel like we're making that personal connection without having to fly all over the country.
Yeah.
So I really don't think we made too many specific trips for investors other than LA a couple of times, which we ended up not closing them. Hmm. But so that was a bummer. But we were more successful with the video calls, actually.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's great. Any tips you employed to kind of close the round, right? You got some commitments outside of, you warmed up people in Portland, you got some commitments from investors outside of Portland, Bay Area and whatnot. And then, you know, any catalyst you had to get everyone to finally cut the checks or what?
Absolutely. I think it was, two things. One was, keeping the conversation alive, even with the ones who said no, just updating them with progress. And then the second and most important is momentum. Once you have momentum and you establish, hey, this is the close date, because you do feel that you've got that momentum on your side, establish that close date and then use it as a forcing function to get the investors to either pull the trigger or say a no. Because the no a lot of times is just as valuable as a yes, because you're not wasting your time.
Yep.
I think between those two things, we're in pretty good shape.
How did you know you had momentum? Like what was, because momentum is critical for fundraising, but it's also sort of like nebulous. When did know you had momentum?
I guess the progress that our company was making, just with the customer conversations, the customers we were onboarding, our own internal success metrics we were hitting and tracking, that was a good sign. But then also the conversations we're having with investors, their excitement, the confidence that we had going into more of these meetings because we knew what we were talking about now. Mm-hmm. Because we had had a lot of investor conversations that didn't go so well. We learned from them. And we knew what to say in the next one. So I think it's both internal metrics and then also just how your story refines and how you're getting feedback from investors and how it's being received. And then, of course, closing a couple VCs always gives you that boost of confidence and gives you that momentum to say, okay, you know, I got this, and you can start to project when you're going to close the round based on the amount and the type of investors you're getting to invest.
Yeah. Did you, maybe this is getting real particular here, but when you establish that close date and use it as a forcing function, which I think is a great concept, do you remember, did you have half the round committed or two thirds or like, you know, any cues there?
Yeah. So we ended up oversubscribing by quite a bit by using this update and then momentum theory that we were hinging on. I think we were about halfway with the round when we said, okay, we really need to either just close this round and run lean to hit our next milestones, or we need to close this round by this date because it's becoming potentially becoming disruptive. Yeah. So we set the date. We were fine with either outcome. And just so happens that we had to extend the cap on our note two or three times because those two functions really got investors excited and got them moving.
Extend the cap on your note. What do you mean by that? Do you mean raise the cap or
More of the ceiling of the note. The ceiling on the note was up to $1 million, and we had to extend it a couple of times to allow in the full 3.7.
Yeah, got it. Okay, great. Okay, let's see. A couple more just quick questions. I'll let you get back to building your business. What tips would you have for, you know, founders in Portland? Any good resources they should check out to kind of plug into both startup and investor scene? And maybe the same question with AR startups too, if there's anything you can point to saying, check out these resources.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's some really great resources. I think one of the best ones is the entrepreneurs in Portland. I mean, it's a pretty small network. Portland, Vancouver, Washington, same type of scene. Reach out to them on LinkedIn. Worst case scenario, they say no, they won't grab coffee with you. But really just start to connect and build your network, because a lot of times these investors are going to reach out to the Portland network or the Bay Area network, and they're going to talk to these other founders in their portfolio and ask them if they know about you or what they think about your idea. And if you can already have some of these entrepreneurs prepped and liking what liking you and what you're building, you'll be worlds apart. And then also they can open a lot of doors to their investors as well. So I think that's one. And two is Portland specifically, the Portland Seed Fund's a great resource. Jim and Angela, the managing partners, are always open to talking with entrepreneurs. Same thing with Oregon Venture Fund. And then the AR and VR startups here in Portland. Some of the ones that come to mind is VR, Wild, Built by Wild, and then VR Motion. And then as far as AR, Torch 3D, Stream, of course, I'm happy to grab coffee with any budding entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And then, there's Object Theory is another really great one. Portland's really becoming quite the scene for AR, VR. There's also some really great meetups as well.
Mm, yeah, cool. That's great. Are Portland Seed Fund and Oregon Venture Fund, are they just traditional venture funds, or are they more of a government kind of economic stimulus type of fund?
Yeah, so I think Portland Seed Fund definitely has some government funding. They started as a seed fund. I would say they're becoming more of a venture fund. And then Oregon Venture Fund, they were called Oregon Angel Fund, and they've also matured. So it's been fun to see even the VCs maturing with the Portland market and the Portland startup scene as well. They're raising larger funds. Some of the Portland companies are seeing larger exits, and it's all kind of being recycled back into the startup ecosystem here. So it's an exciting time for the Northwest for sure.
Are you guys seeing a lot of California startups move up there? I mean, it's you know, you hear all these stories about Bay Area exodus. And I know my hometown's Boulder, Colorado. A lot of companies are going there.
Oh, yeah.
Are you guys getting a ton of – and are you sick of the Californians yet or what?
Just their driving. Yeah, I think we are. Not as much as probably Austin and Boulder and even really Seattle, but we are starting to see quite the uptick in companies moving to the Portland, Vancouver metro areas, which is great in the sense that we're getting a lot more talent here. The downside is, you know, rent and everything is going up, but that's just the name of the game. But still, Portland is a very affordable place to live compared to some of the alternatives. Live, raise a family, and then the town is just, it's a very friendly pay it forward type town. So you are seeing a lot of companies and then even a lot of technologists wanting to work for Portland companies just because of the lifestyle as well.
Yeah, just recruit during the summer. There's your tip.
Exactly.
I like that. Anything we haven't covered? Any advice you would give your younger self, or you know, if you were starting this whole process again? Any other guidance that we haven't touched on?
Oh man, I don't know if we have that much time. I made literally every mistake in the book, so I think some of the best advice I would probably give the younger Ryan would be do your due diligence on people that you're getting into business with, whether they're advisors, investors. Or co-founders or employees, because that could bring some of the biggest setback. And then also, if you're going to commit wholeheartedly and go at this as if your life depends on it, because it could be the most rewarding thing, but it's also one of the most stressful things that you'll probably ever do in your life. Connect with the right people who can help support you.
Very good. All right. For people who want to learn more, it's stream.pro. Do I have that right? Once you tell me.
Nailed it.
Okay.
Yep.
Stream.pro.
Stream.pro. Yeah.
Awesome. I didn't even know there was a .pro domain. That's cool. I'll have to go nail that. Grab that. Cool. Any call to action? Anything you want to plug or promote or you know anything you're recruiting for that you'd like people to contact you about?
Yeah, actually, thank you. So we are going to be opening up our consumer app so anyone can come in and stream with a professional. It was before guarded by an invite code. So if anyone who's listening is looking to do a home service project and hire a landscaper or plumber, et cetera, definitely check us out. We're on Android and iOS.
Cool. Stream.pro on Android and iOS. All right. Well, thank you, Ryan. This is great. Lots of fun stuff in this one, so I appreciate it. Good luck with Stream. Sounds really cool, and we're spoiled. My wife and I, we live in the Presidio, and if anything breaks, we just call the. It's all like federally managed, so we call up, and they replace the dishwasher like in 30 minutes. It's kind of crazy. We're very spoiled by that, so I probably won't be a customer immediately, but.
We'll get you for cooking or something else in the future.
There you go. All right. All right. Thank you, Ryan. This is great. Continued success, and we'll catch you after the next round.
Yeah, thank you as well. Thanks for having me.